Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. We invite you to join us as we examine the unvarnished truth about the drug war. Thank you for joining us on this week's version of Cultural Baggage. Our guest this week is Paul Krassner. ABC newscaster Harry Reasoner wrote in his memoirs, quote, "Krassner not only attacks establishment values, he attacks decency in general," end quote. So Krassner named his one-person show Attacking Decency in General. Receiving awards from the LA Weekly and Dramalogue, he's the only person in the world ever to win awards from both Playboy for satire and the Feminist Party Media Workshop for journalism. He has a brand new book just hitting the newsstands, Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, From Toad Slime to Ecstasy. We'll have Paul on the phone here in just a couple of minutes, but first, Poppygate. Drug Czar of the Americas, John Walters.
High-potency marijuana ought not to be considered as a marijuana was in the past. It ought to be considered another new drug.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Marijuana poses a greater danger to the United States than heroin or cocaine, said John Walters, U.S. Drug Czar, in an interview in Vancouver. Someone should tell him to listen to this week's Poppygate update. Esteemed journalist Christian Parenti reports from U.S.-occupied northern Afghanistan in this week's The Nation. Quote, "Surrounding us in all directions are fields of marijuana on the verge of harvest. The plants are tall, thick, and fragrant, their dark green flowers glistening with potent oils," end quote. In a separate interview, he goes on to add that he had spent the day visiting fields of marijuana as far as the eye can see. On October 9th, the Asia Times reported vast fields of marijuana in U.S.-occupied southern Afghanistan. Quote, "The makeshift road snakes through miles of pungent cultivated cannabis grown for hashish." Speaking of fragrance and pungency, cannabis pioneer Vernard Bruning, who created Holland's first coffee shop nearly 30 years ago, traces the lineage of today's skunk directly to earlier Afghan strains. Jeepers creepers, where's the reefers? Way down yonder in Afghanistan. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Mr. Walters. This is Glenn Greenway, reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Yes, that was a Poppygate report talking about marijuana, but if it's so damn dangerous, why are they allowing it to grow in Afghanistan? If you're a regular listener to our programs, you've heard many times representatives of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc. I recently had a chance to talk to the director of LEAP, Mr. Jack Cole. And here's a part of an interview I did with him.
Spent 26 years in New Jersey State Police, 14 years undercover in narcotics. And what we're here for is to end the war on drugs and legalize all drugs. Legalize them so they can be controlled and regulated and kept out of the hands of our children.
Jack, oftentimes I see that sticker on the back of my car. Drugs are too dangerous to leave in the hands of criminals. And that's the underlying principle of LEAP, is it not?
That is exactly the principle, yes, sir.
In the northern parts of Mexico now, they're starting to have this ongoing drug war. They say they've captured a couple of more kingpins, etc. You know, they make it sound as if they're going to make a difference. But does it ever make any difference?
No, it never makes a difference. But that's the name of the game for the drug warriors. They have to keep trying to make it sound like it's going to make a difference so that they can get that next funding proposal in, and they'll get more money for doing the same thing. And the same thing happens to be pretty much spending over half $1 trillion already on the war on drugs, and guaranteeing that every year we continue, we'll spend another minimum $69 billion to continue that war. And all we have to show for it is every year we arrest over 1.6 million human beings in this country for nonviolent drug offenses incarcerate at the rate of 699 per 100,000 population, yet drugs are cheaper, more potent, and far easier to get now than they were 34 years ago when I started buying them undercover on the streets. Now, to me, that's the very essence of a failed public policy.
Jack Cole and other members of law enforcement against prohibition have attended several national and international conferences for police officers. And Jack says their reception has been amazing.
Well, they're fairly decent people, you know, and they don't want to embarrass themselves or be rude, so they listen to us and we talk, discuss it for a few minutes. And when we're done, we keep track of what their opinions are after they've talked to us, whether they agree with us, disagree, and we are absolutely amazed at what we're finding. We're finding that 6% of them want to continue the war on drugs. 14% are undecided, and a whopping 80% of them agree with us that we need to end the war on drugs and legalize drugs if we're going to change any of this. And you know, Dean, what's most interesting about this is I don't think there's one of them that knows that anybody else thinks the way they do. It's just amazing. Because of the stigma attached to drugs in this country, every one of these people in law enforcement is afraid to talk to other people about things that they believe. So what we're doing at LEAP is we're giving them an opening, giving them a chance, legitimizing their true beliefs. And toward the end of each conference, after I was talking to them, if they agreed with us, I'd show them these little chicken marks I'm making on here for agree, disagree, and undecided. I said, hey, you know, you're in the vast majority of law enforcement in this country. You should get out there and talk to your associates. They agree with you on this. And they just they didn't ever understand that before. So I think we're going to make some major changes.
Well, Jack, when you take out that 14% undecided, it's a ratio of 15-1, approximately.
Yes, sir. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is indeed. Well, Jack Cole, Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, we appreciate you being with us. And tell the folks your website, if you will.
Okay, you can find us at www.leap.cc. And it's a great website. It's just chock full of lots of good information about the real facts of the war on drugs and the real horrors that we are creating in this war. And it even gives some solutions for, we're one of the only ones out there that tends to give solutions to how we can stop all this destructive action.
Jack Cole is absolutely right. I talk to politicians, both state and federal. I talk to local officials and even the policemen out on the street. And I can find no one willing to stand for more drug war, and certainly no one willing to speak of such on the radio. To any member of law enforcement out there patrolling the streets in one of the Drug Truth Network cities, if you'd like to have a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition give a speech at your next patrolman's union meeting, please contact these current and former law enforcement officials at leap.cc. All right, my friends, we're glad you're with us. We're sorry about that glitch on the CD a moment ago, but Jack Cole, it's important that we give him a listen. And we do have online Mr. Paul Krasner. Paul, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Hello, Paul. Yes, sir. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. The more I read up on you, you're into so many things. Paul, you're a radio man as well.
Oh, yeah. I have my own show in San Francisco that lasted 7 months.
Well, you've been involved in many of the cultural changes, if you will, in our society over the last several decades. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
People magazine called me the father of the underground press, and I immediately demanded a paternity test. In 1958, I started a magazine called The Realist, which was a satirical magazine, and I didn't know it was countercultural because there was no such word yet, but I felt like a Martian, and I knew that if I was the only one, there was no hope. and And so the magazine began to attract a lot of Martians.
I hear.
And then I got involved in what you might call participatory journalism. So when I interviewed Ram Dass, who was then Richard Alpert, and Timothy Leary, I ended up taking 300 acid trips. When I covered the anti-Vietnam War movement, as a reporter, I ended up forming the Yippies, the Youth International Party, with Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin. And when I interviewed, this was in the 60s when abortion was illegal, I interviewed and made an anonymous interview a doctor who ran a clinic where he performed abortions and never charged more than $5. He was a true humanitarian, and he was. Women came to him from all over the country. He was known as the Saint. And so I ended up becoming an underground abortion referral service because after I published the interview, I got a lot of calls. And I got called before two district attorneys in two different cities. So I never made a distinction between observation and participation. And I also never labeled an article as investigative journalism or satire, because the line, more and more, as you know, has blurred into nothingness.
Well, people talk about these days of, don't hate the media, become the media. And in some ways, you've done that decades in advance of that thought.
Yeah, it was just, one of the things I did was I edited Lenny Bruce's autobiography, How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. And I had the same goal in print as Lenny had on stage. And it was just the freedom to talk publicly with as much freedom as you have in your own living room. Go ahead.
Okay, Paul, I was just going to say, the election is today, and many, many battles being fought across this nation. Any thoughts you'd like to relay in that regard?
You want to hear my prediction, which I wrote 5 days ago?
Let's go.
Okay, let's see here. I'm writing this 5 days before the election. I predict that either there will be a relatively landslide victory for Kerry, indicating that the polls were skewed, bypassing cell phones, vote-or-die campaigns, and disillusioned Christians, or the results will be so close that 50,000 Democratic lawyers will end up battling back and forth in the courts with 50,000 Republican lawyers, dragging out, appealing again and again, stalling around for, say, at least 4 years, until finally John Edwards, his pompadour prematurely gray, argues the case unsuccessfully before the U.S. Supreme Court, which by then will be packed with Bush's reactionary appointees. Is that the way the world will end, with neither a bang nor a whimper, but with a bloodless bipartisan coup?
You could be right. That's the real scary part.
Well, that's a good example of what we would just mention before, the line having blurred between satire and reality. It's getting more and more difficult to satirize, what's going on in Washington and Hollywood and wherever you look. It's everything is accelerating. Even the rate of acceleration is accelerating.
Right, kind of like the speed of light catching up to itself or something. I'm not sure. Paul, I want to talk about your new book. And again, I want to alert folks out there first that Paul has written, dozens of books, perhaps. I want to list a couple of them. Let's see. The Winner of the Slow Bicycle Race, The Satirical Writings of Paul Krassner, which has an introduction by Kurt Vonnegut, a trilogy, Pot Stories for the Soul, Psychedelic Trips for the Mind, and his latest here, which I have a copy of, and we'll give you folks out there listening on the network a chance to get a copy a little bit later on. But it's named Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, From Toad Slime to Ecstasy. And, Paul, I tell you what, give us about a one-minute break here. We're going to try to name that drug by its side effect, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Texas Defense Attorney of the Year from Tulia, Texas, Jeff Blackburn.
These guys are into numbers. they want to make big numbers, because the bigger the numbers, the more money you get. If you can make good numbers with good arrest and convictions, and not good, just any arrest, any conviction, anything to show that you're running people through the system, you're going to get bigger grants that year, and you're going to get finer cars to drive in, and you're going to get cooler stuff and bigger guns and more ninja costumes to wear, and on and on and on. It's about the numbers.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its Side Effects. Itching, a loss of taste, loss of appetite, unusual fatigue, changes in vision, difficulty breathing, liver damage with a rapid need for organ transplant, congestive heart failure, and death. Time's up. The answer, Lamisil, approved by the FDA for toenail fungus.
All right, we are back with Paul Krasner. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio. Paul, this new book of yours, Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, I find it to be just hilarious in parts, and kind of gets me to thinking at other times about, you know, you mentioned 300 trips on acid. I figure I did something like that myself. Probably didn't get it the quality that you did. But let's talk about your new book. Tell us a little bit about it, what we're likely to find.
Okay. Well, the background is that about 5 or 6 years ago, I realized how much propaganda, anti-drug propaganda, there was. And it didn't match any of my own observations and experience. You know, all my friends had a good time with dope. You know, we would get stoned before going to a movie or before having a nice dinner or going to a musical event. And would always enhance the experience. I mean, I would even smoke before I rolled the joint to enhance the experience. and so I started collecting what was originally going to be funny dope stories. And I kept collecting them, and they weren't all funny. Some of them were just bizarre. Some of them were weird. Some of them had serious information in them. And all different styles, and from all these different drugs, including toad slime, and there's a guy named Todd McCormick who was recently released from federal prison for having serving 5 years for growing medical marijuana, and he contributed two articles to The Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs. One he did on psilocybin and the other on ketamine. And so I sent him his, and which he wrote in prison. And I sent him his contributor's copy in prison. And it came back from the warden with a note. I'll just read you this one sentence. The above-named publication is being rejected because on pages 259 to 261, it describes the process of squeezing toads to obtain illicit substances, which could be detrimental to the security, good order, and discipline of the institution. Can you imagine that, Dean, having a prison riot over toad slime?
How do they pass those around in prison, I'd like to know?
I don't even know. I didn't even know they had toads in prison, unless they have these accomplices on the other side of the wall catapulting them over.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thought and words are dangerous anywhere, I suppose, especially in prison. Let's alert folks to the fact Todd McCormick, he and Peter McWilliams, along with Rene Bouger, were busted for growing marijuana under the auspices of the local sheriff and the local community, and yet were kind of set up and sent to prison by the DEA. And Todd served 5 years for his part in that. And he's you know, they were trying to help sick and dying people.
Right. And the reason they did that with the book, because I ripped out the three pages that were offensive to the warden and sent it back to him again saying, please give this to Todd now. The offending pages are gone. And they sent it back to me again, this time stamped unauthorized. So, you know, so they were just punishing him because they could, because he was there. If you extrapolate on that, it was a microcosm of the prison harassment and abuse that goes on throughout the country, and onward to Guantanamo Bay, where they kept the prisoners from Afghanistan without letting them get in touch with their lawyers and in uncomfortable positions. And, you know, if you ask Attorney General John Ashcroft how he could permit that, he would say, well, you know, those people have more rights than you. And you would ask, what do you mean? And he would say, well, they can go to Cuba and you can't. So, but anyway, it goes ba-boom-boom. Boom. There's a rim shot.
Yeah, yeah.
But it goes from Guantanamo Bay to Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. You know, it's just ultimately in the intensification of dehumanization.
Well, sure, the somehow, quote, legitimization of it all. That
and it starts, you know, it starts with drugs. I mean, illegal drugs. I mean, that's the thing, because as long as any government can arbitrarily decide which drugs should be illegal and which drugs should be legal, then anyone in prison for drugs is really a political prisoner.
Indeed. I've been saying that we've been fighting this war against illegal combatants who possess chemical weapons since December 17th, 1914, with the passage of the Harrison Narcotics Act.
Well, now, you know, there's one thing that all of these illegal drugs have in common. They're not manufactured by corporations. They don't even have an advertising budget. You know, it's like it's free word of mouth, which is the purest form. We don't need no stinking Joe Camel.
Well, and it kind of takes us back to your new book, where I think the majority of the stories in there are of people having a good time, of perhaps a little bit bizarre encounters along the way, but pretty much enjoying themselves. And we must keep in mind that not all drug experiences are wonderful, that set and setting have a lot to do with it, the purity of the drug, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, you know, it is the drug war itself that makes those terrible expenses, those terrible experiences more likely.
Expenses too.
Yes, that's
but
for sure.
Yeah, and you know, and when you try to reason why, I mean, that fellow from Leap, which was very inspiring to hear,
yes,
that you had on before. In fact, another time you'll tell me how to get in touch with him so I can write an article about him.
You betcha. I'll be glad to do it.
So, anyway, you know, when you examine why, it goes way back to racism in this country against blacks and Latinos, and the LaGuardia Commission in 1937 had a favorable thing about marijuana, but it was ignored. Nixon in 74 had a commission, the Schaefer Commission, that also said that marijuana was not harmful at all, and Nixon ignored that. Congress ignored it. So they're all responsible, you know, they have, it's just a lack of compassion, as Lenny Bruce said, for people going behind bars for growing a flower, smoking a flower.
Indeed, indeed. I want to go back in history a little bit. You did LSD with Tim Leary, Ram Dass, and Ken Kesey, but the one that really caught my eye, because I've always just admired his humor and his attitude and his outlook, and that was, says you had the first acid trip with Groucho Marx. Tell us about that.
Well, it was his first, not mine.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, please.
This was like 1967, 68. Otto Preminger, the director, was making a movie called Skidoo, which I would recommend to your listeners if they could rent it sometime.
Skidoo, all right.
S-K-I-D-O-O. Otto Preminger directed it. And it was essentially a pro-acid movie. Tim Leary told me that he had turned on Otto Preminger, so, you know, so it was propaganda, in the best sense of the word. Propaganda has been getting the bad press. Part of it took place in a prison where a hippie got a letter which had been soaked in LSD solution, and he put it into the water supply of the prison, and all the prisoners and guards were tripping. So that was the basis of it. But outside of the prison, there were mafia figures, and Groucho Marx played the part of a mafia chieftain called God, and so and this was before The Godfather,
right?
And so he was a reader of The Realist and knew, and I had written about taking acid, and when I was visiting L.A., I had dinner with him, and he said he wanted to try some LSD, but did I know anywhere where he could get some pure stuff? Because, you know, everybody's doesn't have on their to-do list to have eat some strychnine today. So so I said, yeah, I could get him some. And then he asked if I would like to accompany him on his trip. And, you know, you have to play it cool when inside you're dancing up and down and laughing, go, woo, 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 woo. Say, what? You know, I mean, I didn't play hard to get, but I said, sure, I would be glad to. So anyway, we met at the home of an actress in Beverly Hills. And what I had was, if you know brand name, this was Owsley acid.
Oh, the purest stuff. You bet.
Yeah, the, 300 micrograms.
I've had it once.
And so, and the reason he wanted to, by the way, was because since the movie Skidoo was pro-acid, he felt a kind of responsibility to his fans, his young kids who kind of idolized him, and which was part of his motivation. He had always been curious even before that movie. So the at the home where I usually would trip with rock and roll on, but this was at the home of someone who only seemed to have classical music and Broadway show music. And so at one point we were playing the Bach Cantata number 7. Mm-hmm. And Groucho, at this time we were I think he was peeking, but he said, how come, if I'm supposed to be Jewish, I can see visions of beautiful Gothic cathedrals? And you know, I was just seeing myself. I was seeing sort of a combination dinosaur monkeys. So I told him it was a very individual experience.
It as it always is. You're absolutely right. Paul, they tell me we're running out of time here. I want to first off thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your thoughts and telling us about your new book, Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs from Toad Slimed Ecstasy. You got a website you think folks ought to go visit?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking. It's Paul Krasner. That's with two S's. Paul Krasner at, I'm sorry, paulkrasner.com.
Okay. Paul?
Also, I have a new album out. I have stand-up satire CDs, and the latest one is called The Zen Bastard Rides Again.
Well, Paul, I recommend folks get it, get the new book. It's very entertaining, and I highly recommend it. A couple of program notes as we're headed out here for the book giveaway. If you'd like a copy of Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, send an email to dean@drugtruth.net. Pick a number between 1 and 2004. The closest or the first one with the right number will get a copy of this book. Be sure to include your name and address. Next week, we're going to do a special featuring medical marijuana patients Allison Merton and Valerie Corral, some pre-recorded, some fresh, but that's for the network. We're going to be doing a pledge drive here at the mother station. And, you know, I want to just think about this, if you will. In this election season, when both sides proclaim the need for an eternal war of terror, we should pause and reflect on the fact that we began our war on those who possess chemical weapons long ago on December 14th, 1914, with the passage of the Harrison Narcotics Act. As always, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of Anadis.